things I noticed, like in our communities, you know, the Minneapolis areas, there is more native therapists and there's like quite a few different options of clinics. I think that's the biggest thing is that we're fulfilling a need. And so I feel like that's one of the key pieces, you know, families accessing mental health is that like they feel comfortable and safe coming to a native clinic, knowing that they're going to be taken care of by either native therapists or therapists that have a lot of training and knowledge in the native community. Just to kind of explain what brain spotting is. So it uses eye like placement to process a trauma. And it's actually a natural phenomenon. So basically like how it works is you kind of go in like, oh, I'm having this problem, and you locate where you feel it in your body. So then like you find the brain spot, like where that throat feeling is the heaviest, and you're actually processing the why. The way that we operate sometimes, like we don't even recognize like how much we are impacted by our subconscious brain. So brain spotting is a tool that can kind of help integrate and like process the things that are like impacting. And so this tool allows us to process those things so we can live in a good way and so we can move through those things. The way that this can help with that historical trauma, what we do know is that it is stuck in our body. And from personal experience, like getting brain spotting done, I've been getting it done for about 3 years now, almost going on four, is that my brain is able to process things that happened to my grandparents and my parents. And I can go on and on about like what happened because it's really beautiful to see. And what I noticed is like it provides the space to release those things that were stuck in their body because they're in survival, you know, and it makes sense, you know, because like if you think about the things that they've been through, it's way different than us. Like they were being displaced. They were, you know, in boarding school. They were, you know, their language was being stolen. Like there was just all of these things that were happening. And so, of course, they stored it in their body and they unintentionally passed it down to us. So now we're in this space of healing, like we're that generation that's like kind of in the middle where we're healing. And so brain spotting allows a tool for us to like process those things and release them in a good way. And it's not the only way. It's not like the end all be all way of doing it, but it's a tool that we can utilize because it does access those stored memories that we cannot access by talking. You know, as we know, as a people, like we have the four directions and four parts of ourselves. So there's the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. And one of the pieces like with spiritual healing that I really hope to see is how do we integrate brain spotting with spiritual healing? You know, because like what I'm seeing in my work is that like they go hand in hand. Our communities are impacted by, you know, so much adversity, like fentanyl, grief, houselessness, like there's all these things. So I'm not here to promote that brain spotting is going to fix all of that, but it is a tool that, you know, we can utilize as we navigate our healing. And like the most important tool that we have is our communities and ourselves. So just to always remember that, like there's always these tools that we can use to heal, but coming together as a community is going to be the most helpful, most powerful tool that we have.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. You can find Minnesota Native News on social media. Follow us on Facebook at Minnesota Native News and on Instagram and X at MN Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Bonjour, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with David Wise, descendant of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and founder of Native Wise, a farm which is focused on soil health, restorative farming, and Indigenous agricultural practices. David started a bison herd after a dream about Chief Buffalo, who told him to bring back his namesake. The herd began with 12 bison and has multiplied since. The farm is also home to 3 Ojibwe spirit horses, so we of course dig into the bison herd, horses, and much more. This episode originally aired in June of 2025.
There's never a dull moment with the bison. Sometimes they're as mellow as can be, and then sometimes I just think, oh my God, I hope my fences are good enough. They do this thing whenever they get into a new paddock. They run around kicking their legs off to the side. When I put bales out there, they'll rip those bales all up with their horns, and they'll be running around with hay all over. They're just super fun to watch.
Buju Anin, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lem. Be great for joining us. Native Lights is a podcast and radio show, but more than that, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have great conversations with captivating guests from a bunch of different backgrounds, musicians, community leaders, doctors, language warriors, you name it, we talk to them. They have a wonderful mixture of passions, and they share with us their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the point of purpose in our lives. And it's another day, another opportunity to amplify Native voices. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. We were talking a little bit about sleep before we started the recording. Just trying to, you know, trying to get as much as possible these days.
Just trying to.
But, you know, it's hard to get rid of the distractions sometimes. I put on an audiobook to go to sleep, but, you know, it keeps me awake because I'm so captivated. How are you doing on that whole situation?
Sleep is tough. You know, I think it's, you know, it's lighter outside, gets lighter in the morning. Got a puppy who wants up every morning, 5:30 at the latest. I try to go back to sleep after letting him out, but, you know, it's to be seen whether or not that happens, depending on the morning. But yeah, it's tough. But yeah, I like listening to audiobooks too, or podcasts, of course. Sometimes they're so good that it just keeps you awake. Do you do anything else to try to improve your sleep health?
I think just keeping that solid schedule helps. Trying to start the process at a certain time, winding down, getting the blue screens out of your face.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Try not to eat so close to bed, too, is a good thing. So we're working on it. It's a process. But on to a not-so-sleepy subject, our guest for today. We're very excited to speak with David Wise, descendant of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and founder of Native Wise Farm. He and his wife, Petra, and their family supply CSA boxes, and they have an online store. David also has a ranch where they've introduced a bison herd, so we'll talk all about that and more. Buju, David.
Hi there. Buju.
Buju.
All right. Well, Buju, David, could you start by introducing yourself and letting us know where you're joining us from?
Buju, I'm coming to you from the Fond du Lac Reservation over here at Nagachiwanung. And we're on the southwest corner of the reservation here at Native Wise Ranch.
Great. How are you doing? How's family doing?
Good. Everyone's doing good. We did a little bit of prescribed burn, get a lot of snow, but we wanted to burn one of our old blueberry patches, so it was nice to get that done early this spring. Otherwise, after that, it's been pretty dry.
I understand that you just welcomed a kiddo to the family?
Yeah. Little McGeezy June. She's named after my mom. She was born in February, the latest edition. She's doing great.
Good to hear.
22 inches long. She's going to be a tall girl.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We had 6 baby bison born this spring so far.
6?
We got Renegade. I traded the Red Lake Nation for some whitefish that we did from Lake Superior for them for their Christmas party a few years ago. And they had a bull up there that he had quite a history. When he was little, he ran away. And so they named him Renegade. And just about the time that they thought they might have to harvest him because he was so far away from the pen and he was getting off the res, he came back just like a miracle and got back in there. And then they actually wrote a children's book about him, but he was related to a lot of the cows. So they were nice enough to trade him to us.
Wonderful. Well, why don't you give us a bit of an overview of Native Wise? Your company, please.
Well, we specialize in native food, or what we call good medicine. My grandmother always said good food is good medicine. And so that's what we kind of modeled our business off of. We started it. My family's always, you know, did a lot of wild rice harvesting and processing. And we, you know, sold that, and we always had big gardens and stuff. We started a CSA back in 2019. And so we were providing vegetable boxes once a week, to Duluth, basically, to a lot of different people around Duluth. And it was organized through the AACO, the American Indian Housing Organization in Duluth, helped us organize it. We also donated a couple boxes every week to Native American community and inner city Duluth, like needy families and stuff like that, whatever we'd have extra. And so that was a really great relationship. It got our name out there, and my kids are kind of younger. They're like 8 and 5, the ones that are able to help. Maggie can't quite do much yet, but anyway, they help put the boxes together every week. We also did CBD hemp. We grew that 5 acres of that on our property, and we hired community members to help. Our wild rice, the maple syrup and maple sugar that we produced. We do bees on our ranch too, because they help out with the pollination. And they also are just great to have around, and honey is so healing and good. So I did this report for work for the USDA. At the time I was a tribal liaison, I worked with all 11 federally recognized tribes in Minnesota. After I graduated from college, I went on to work for the NRCS as tribal liaison. My main job there was trying to help roll out the farm bill to tribes and help them understand all the different possibilities in the farm bill and interpret some of the different, you know, like complicated rules and things like that. And that was pretty rewarding. And I got to learn a lot about some of the needs of the tribes. It really made me think a lot about food sovereignty and like where we were as a people and what kind of food we were eating and how healthy we were at that time. And I started thinking there's a lot of things that we could do to improve our health, to improve our connection back to the land, you know. One of the projects I had to work on was, for my job, was called Working Effectively with American Indians. So it would basically be training the government employees on how to network with the tribes, like some of the protocol. And part of my presentation, I was researching tribal leaders and giving a report on historical leaders. And so I picked Chief Buffalo. He was one of the chiefs that signed a lot of the different treaties in the 1800s. And I found out that I was related to Chief Buffalo. He was actually, would have been my, like 7 generations back, my grandfather, his daughter married a man. And then that was where our last name came from.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with David Wise, a descendant of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and founder of Native Wise, a farm which is focused on soil health, restorative farming, and Indigenous agricultural practices.
So why did you want to work with the bison? Tell us about the process of bringing them back to the reservation, back to the ranch.
I started having a lot of dreams about Chief Buffalo, and I was like thinking about how it was back in his time and all that. And then one time he was talking about bring back his namesake or bring back the buffalo, you know. And we didn't even own the ranch at the time. And it ended up that my cousin was, you know, she doesn't even live around here. So she ended up giving us a great deal on part of it, the ranch. And then just at about the same time, we learned about this Tonka project, where there's this organization that helps bring bison that are on public lands. Instead of slaughtering them or selling them to non-natives, they bring them back to the reservations, and they work with tribal landowners. So there's another organization called the Intertribal Bison Association. They work mostly with tribes. And I worked with both of these organizations in my job, or knew of them, you know, because we did a lot of like habitat work with the tribes. And we contacted them, and we were able to get on their list and meet the requirements. Some of the requirements is you have to have land, you have to have watering system that's adequate, you have to have fencing and a few other things. And they also have some funding to help out with that. We were able to tap into some different USDA funding for some of our fencing and things like that. And bison's been our latest, and for sure for me, the most enjoyable, just to see him back on the landscape. We're setting up a real high quality rotational grazing so that we'll be able to rotate the animals like every 7 or 8 days to a new paddock that's nice and fresh and green. it's not all crazy and Western, like, you know, Yellowstone or something like that. You just open the gate up and like they just want to go to the other one. And as long as you treat the bison with respect, they don't try to get out. You know, I did build these big, like, Jurassic Park fences to begin with, because that was like the requirement or whatever. And but they're just fine. I did have a little breakout one time. We called them the Dirty Dozen. They got out, but they were real small, and they got out into the big backfield that I haven't gotten fenced in yet. And that was quite the adventure. Oh my God. They almost made it out, that they were going down our driveway, and the neighbor guy, I called him and he headed them off. And just by chance, happened to be going by. He's our tribal chairman now, by the way. I called him up. I'm like, hey, where are you? And he's like, oh, I'm just on Spirit Lake Road. And I'm like, hey, can you drive up my road? My wife always just laughs because he was eating a bag of Doritos or something, just munching down, driving in his little Volkswagen car. And all of a sudden, here's the bison running right in front of him. And they went back up and into the, along this riverbank where we wanted them to go. And I literally fenced it off for like 3 days in a row just to get like a temporary fence up. And those little buggers were watching me the whole time, trying to like think about getting out. It was crazy. And then finally, I lured them back in with all the other, they wanted to get back in with all the other bison. So I took these cattle panels and I made a funnel type thing. They like apples and pumpkins and stuff, and like, you know, like alfalfa pellets and stuff like that. So I kind of baited them up, and I got some of them to come back in there through like a fish trap, kind of a narrow, you know, so they went in between there, and then they got back in with the other ones. But there was still like 7 or 8 of them out. And so then I was thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do. The weather was getting cold. I thought they might go across the river if it froze. And I had to keep notifying like the authorities and everything. And finally, one day I got them all to go into the corral, the ones that were in. And then we got the gate opened up in the back. And that night, they all came back in. So we snuck around the back and we just caught them. Like, it was like, oh my God, it was crazy.
I'm curious, David, how much experience had you had with bison before you introduced them into the ranch?
Well, pretty much not much other than what I read. And, you know, my uncle was a Native American cattle guy his whole life, and that's kind of a rare deal. He just loved farming, and he had dairy cows and beef cows, and he was like an old bachelor, and he just loved it, and I helped him all the time. I would go there and help him with cleaning and feeding the baby calves and all that. So, you know, I kind of knew a lot about animals. We always had gardens, so I knew a lot about crops. The land that we live on here isn't like a typical farm. You know, it's like some of the areas are wooded that I got fenced off. So there's grasses that grow underneath the trees, and they love that area. They absolutely love it. We had a fire on the ranch. They loved it where it burnt. And they tear up the brush, and they, one lady from the USDA came out and she's like, well, you can't fence in those wooded areas. And I said, well, I've been reading about bison, and they actually love to have some woods in their paddocks, you know? So anyway, I finally convinced her after she seen how good they were doing in there.
How many bison do you have?
We started out with 12, and we had 12 for like a year, and then we got those 20, and that was the Dirty Dozen that got out. And they were just, yeah, they were crazy little buggers. And then we got like 15 more, and then the babies were born. And I think now we're up to like 50. Oh, we had to butcher one from the ranch. He got injured by a bigger bull, I think, is what happened, because I went out there in the morning and he was having problems. But he was fine to salvage and stuff. Right now we're up to, I think, 56 or somewhere around that number.
Do they have names?
Oh, my wife named one Boss Babe, because she's like the bossy cow lead one. I did name one other one Rosie. She got off the truck and she had a bloody broken horn from the trip over. Kind of grew a little bit funny, so I can recognize her. And she's always super friendly. And like, they know the second I start my tractor up or what I'm doing. When they first got here, they weren't real vocal. And now, like, when I'm out there, they talk and they grunt. And Those babies are crazy. Oh my God. I can't believe how fast they can run. And right up to the fence, and they'll spin around. Yeah, there's never a dull moment with the bison. Sometimes they're as mellow as can be, and then sometimes I just think, oh my God, I hope my fences are good enough. They do this thing whenever they get into a new paddock. They run around kicking their legs off to the side. When I put bales out there, they'll rip those bales all up with their horns, and they'll be running around with hay all over. They're just super fun to watch. In our herd here, we're kind of trying to build up like a good genetic diversity. So the one bull is from Wind Cave in South Dakota. The other bull came from the zoo. His name is Brutus, and he's a monster. He's like 12 years old. But he always lived in the zoo, and so he just loves it out here. And they got into it a little bit. At first, they butted heads for probably about 20 minutes. And now they're like best buddies. They just lay together out on the field. They have a little wallows up there, and they always go to the highest points. And then they'll be checking out what's going on. And
yeah, I was going to ask just one more question about the bison, if they play. So do they like splash around in the puddles or anything like that?
They fight all the time. And I don't like to get to know them too good because some of the bulls will probably get butchered, you know, but the cows, we're trying to keep all of them for our breeding stock. We haven't really been butchering too many of ours right off the ranch yet. Our latest project is we're building a warehouse. It's all up. We got it all done except for the inside, like some of the plumbing and stuff still needs to be done. But we're hoping that we can start doing quarters and halves from the ranch in the near future. We're planning a workshop. Some of our Nijis, our brothers and sisters from South Dakota, are going to come over. We want to know how to utilize, like, right now we use the bones, the fat gets made into cosmetics. So we want to be able to utilize the whole animal, donate the head or whatever for, you know, native art, part of the hair for ceremonial purposes, the hides. We want to be able to utilize the whole animal. These people are going to come over and they're going to talk to us about that kind of thing. And then I have a large outdoor wood smoker. You know, for generations, my family smoked Lake Superior trout, whitefish, deer meat, all that stuff. But I want to learn their way. They talk about making these products where they just hang them up over a fire, and there's really not even any seasonings added to it. So it's a little bit different than like a traditional jerky that you'd put more seasonings and stuff on. An old elder named Virgil, Black Feather Ranch, I think is the name of his ranch. He's right down in the South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming kind of border down in there. Anyways, he's coming up, and then his nephew and a few other people, a couple other elders, I think from over there. And then anyone else that wants to come, I think Sean Sherman, the sous chef's coming, some of his staff. And we're going to do a traditional harvest and then talk about how to utilize that entire animal in a good way. Yeah, we want to reconnect our community. We try to do as many workshops with the youth.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with David Wise, a descendant of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and founder of Native Wise, a farm which is focused on soil health, restorative farming, and Indigenous agricultural practices.
So Ojibwe spirit horses, you also have these on the ranch. Could you talk a little bit about that?
These elders contacted me. They just came over. They're like, can we come over? We're from First Nation Canada. And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't even know them, you know. And they just came over one February day, and they sat on the couch for a while, and they looked around. I showed them around. I thought, you know, they said they wanted to see what the ranch was like and stuff. And so I showed them the bison. I showed them a few horses that we had. We had a couple horses, and my wife made food for them, some hot dish, and we just visited. Before they left, they said, you know, we're getting up there in age, and we're looking for a good fit for some of these Ojibwe spirit horses. And they started telling us the story about the Ojibwe spirit horse. They almost were extinct, and there used to be a lot of them. They always lived around here. They're unique animals. They got different genetics than all other horses. And I didn't even know about them up until these elders told me the story. And then I started looking at, trying to do some research into it. And it turns out that there was down to only four of them. The Canadian government was trying to hunt them down and kill them because they were eating their crops and stuff. And so these three or four guys from Boyce Fort Reservation went out into Canada and got them and brought them back. They were using them for like helping with logging and stuff like that, pulling nets from the water, which is kind of what their original use was. A little bit smaller than a typical horse, but they're kind of shaped like a little workhorse. And they're really cute little things. They got strong hooves and really thick, long tails and manes. They got a special nose flap to keep the really cold air out of their lungs in the wintertime. Super well adapted to here. And they eat a lot of like the native browse is what's good for them. Like if you feed them like clover or anything like that, they'll get almost like diabetic symptoms. So the one had gotten into too much of that. So when we came here, the little native lady from Canada said, do not let him eat like clover and stuff. You got to give him like the swamp grass. His name's Shy Boy. And we got Shy Boy on a somewhat of a diet. And now he's like, I mean, he's doing amazing. Any kid can ride him. We take him to the school sometimes just so people can meet him. And yeah, he's like the ambassador for the Ojibwe Spirit Horse. He's a really cool horse. And then his little buddy Echo, he's a little more of a handful, but he's cute and good too. And then we have Ochitamu, and she's the gray squirrel. Got like a gray coat with a stripe down her back. She was supposed to be pregnant when she came. So I was like, well, we got to feed this horse pretty good, you know. So I put her in with the other mares and thinking, oh man, she's going to have such a cute baby one of these days. Here went past her due date, and here she was getting fat from eating too much, and she wasn't even pregnant. She's a cute little thing, and the kids can ride her. She's kind of big for an Ojibwe spirit horse. She's almost, I think she's 13 and a half hands. So that's like definitely not a pony. I'd definitely consider that a horse, but kind of a smaller horse. So yeah, they get along really good with the bison. They're nose to nose on the fence sometimes when we rotate them. And one thing I noticed about those Ojibwe horses was they almost had like a memory for the bison. Like they weren't scared of them. Like a quarter horse and a thoroughbred, they were all wound up like, oh, these things are going to kill us. Like they're big bear. I mean, they were all just freaking out. Had to take a lot of time to like finally get them used to it. The little Ojibwe horse, I went down there the first day after we got him. He's laying down right next to the fence by the bison. They're just like taking a nap. And I'm like, wow, he's not scared of him at all. Shy Boy, just that was the only Ojibwe horse we had for 2 years. And then we got the other ones. Our goal to try to bring the breed back. So we hope that Ochitamu can have a baby because their genetics is really like limited. And so we're working with the university and trying to do like a nonprofit to raise money to help bring them back.
Mm.
We're just caretaking for them, you know. The elders still, they're their horses, but we're just taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope that all the tribal communities could have spirit horses and be reconnected with them because they are so cool and they're different than all other horses. They're more uniquely adapted to our area. They want to be around people. A lot of horses do, but they take it to a different level. You know, they're really friendly.
Great. Yeah, I was curious how their temperament compares.
Yeah. Well, you know, like them draft horses in general are more chill than like the race horses and stuff, you know. They're just bred differently. And these guys are kind of like that. They're like a little miniature draft horse or something. They're real chill and they're strong. Boy, we trim our own horses' hooves because you got to clean all their feet. Then you got to sit there and try to hold all that weight up and trim them. And those Ojibwe horses' hooves, they would never need shoes, man. They got like the toughest hooves in the world. I mean, you can just barely cut through them. Echo, he wouldn't let anyone trim his hooves unless he was sedated or whatever because he didn't trust people. But this old guy that I bought a saddle from, he was like feeling bad when I bought the saddle. I was like, why don't you come out to the ranch and help? Turns out he did all kinds of like crazy rodeo stuff back in the day, and he just loves working with horses. And so he comes out and he's made a great bond with X